You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded January 29th, 2025. Well, last week, Lebanon's new president, Joseph Aoun, told UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres Israel must have withdrawn all its military forces from the south of the country, as stipulated in the November ceasefire agreement signed by Hezbollah and the Lebanese and Israeli governments by January 26th. That deadline came and went over the weekend, and the Israeli military remains. More than that, the IDF never ceased destroying civilian infrastructure, bombing houses, businesses, and vehicles throughout the 60-day ceasefire implementation period, and is now targeting civilians returning to their homes directly, killing and maiming much in the manner we have witnessed it do in Gaza and the West Bank. For its part, Hezbollah has allowed the peace process continue, but warns the parties supposedly policing the ceasefire against testing its patience. Monday, Hezbollah Secretary General rejected any prolonging of the ceasefire implementation period, as Israel insists, saying, quote, "We do not accept an extension, not even for one day." Laith Maarouf is a Beirut-based multimedia consultant, producer, and now frontline war reporter. He's the founder and executive director of FreePalestine.video, whose purpose, it says, is to provide coverage of the region, quote, "in the absence of media supporting the resistance forces in the English language due to the ban in the West." Laith Maarouf in the first half. And it's not just foreign media being disappeared from Western discourse. Those here at home opposing perpetual war, capitalist corruption, and authoritarianism, well used to being absented from corporate presses, are now being erased too from the social sphere. But there's a difference between being unable to breach legacy media gatekeeping to get one's squeaks in on its platforms and the insidious tactics deployed by the likes of YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Twitter X. David Rovix knows more than most the heavy, sometimes arbitrary hand of the censor, and he's all too familiar with the invidious sting of the cancel crowd. Both have conspired to wreck his increasingly social media-dependent musical career and stifle his persistently pointed criticism of their noisome activities. The demonetized, deleted, but not disappeared David Rovix in the second half. But first, Laith Maarouf from Lebanon, where Israel's fire never ceased. Welcome back to the program, Laith.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course. Now, Laith, dozens have been killed by Israeli fire as they return to their villages and home in southern Lebanon. Hezbollah Secretary General Qassem says, quote, "We are facing an occupier that assaults and refuses to withdraw, and the resistance has the right to act as it deems appropriate in terms of the nature, form, and timing of the confrontation." Laith, does this mean that that a confrontation then is just between Hezbollah and Israel again is just a matter of time?
Well, it will all depend, I guess, on what happens in the next few days, because the Israelis, under the pressure of civilians going back and confronting them with their bare flesh, have withdrawn from almost all the villages, save for a few villages on the slopes of the Golan Heights, and a few hills outside towns and villages on the borderline between occupied Palestine and Lebanon. So for the most part, up until now, the Israelis have been retreating. Of course, they have also been conducting air raids. They attacked yesterday Nabatiya town, which is way away from the border, 20 kilometers away at least. And then they also attacked two different villages today from the air. So we'll see how things roll out in the next few days. But I don't think the Israelis can stay longer than that. The Lebanese military is moving in into the villages that were liberated by the civilians. and not much excuses left for the Israelis to stay on, in the land. And if they do, then definitely there will be a military confrontation again.
Well, as far as an excuse for the Israelis to say to stay, that would be the extension of the ceasefire terms that lapsed on the 27th. Hezbollah says they won't accept that on any condition, but I'm reading headlines that say that this is a de facto agreement between the government of Lebanon, brokered by the United States, between they and Israel, so that this state of an extension of the ceasefire is extant right now. Is that right?
Well, this is the what the Israelis are claiming and what the Americans are claiming. But we have no confirmation that the Lebanese government accepted such an extension. We know that the American brokers, or the masters of the Zionists, basically said that they wanted an extension to the 27th of February, which would have coincided with the end of the ceasefire in Gaza. But the Lebanese government and the Lebanese military refused that extension. And then the Americans came back with this new date, February 16th, I believe. And again, the Israelis and the Americans are just doing whatever they want to. It doesn't seem like the Lebanese government has much say. I don't think, you know, given that this is the first test for the new president and the new prime minister, they can't afford to look weak. Even the Lebanese military, which initially was blocking the return of the civilians, capitulated and had to act in a sovereign way and actually moved into the villages with the civilians. So the pressure of the people in the street is not going to allow the government, even though that it's been handpicked by the Americans, to deliver on what the Israelis want.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at the Cradle, and they've got an article from yesterday. New Israeli airstrike hits South Lebanon in violation of ceasefire extension. And in there, they are saying that Beirut accepted a U.S. mandate extension of the ceasefire, and that the bombing that you mentioned in Nebatia is a violation of that extension. Not that there haven't been multiple violations of every agreement in Lebanon and elsewhere by Israel the whole time, more than 500, as Hezbollah has estimated. Well, what is Hezbollah doing then? Have they been fighting back?
No, up until now, Hezbollah is not fighting back. It is playing this game because, look, the Americans came in, picked a president, picked a new prime minister, and the whole excuse is that these new president, the new government, will be building the military to take its position as the protector of the country. Well, here is now the chance for this new government and this new military to prove themselves. And if they don't, that only solidifies the standing of Hezbollah and as the protector of the country. And this is what's happening right now. So the more the new government and the military do not deliver on their duties to protect the territory of the country and the citizens of the country, the more legitimate Hezbollah is. And I think it's been a perfect play by Hezbollah. And the speech by Sayyid Naeem Qasem, the new Secretary General of Hezbollah, that just happened 2 days ago, was the first time the whole country waited to hear his opinion since he got the position of the Secretary General. So we see a revival of both the leadership of Hezbollah's stature in the country and the revival of the love for resistance as a whole in the country because of the failures of the government. So, shortly, if the Israelis actually continue to occupy those few villages and hills, there will be a resistance. And I don't think the new government wants that. It will probably, beg its masters in Washington to get the Israelis out as soon as possible.
Well, and they seem to be doing that now. The new president, Ayoun, he's already been talking to Macron, trying to get the French to strengthen the position of the LAF, the Lebanese army. I'm seeing reports that it's clear that the hope has always been from the West to strengthen the Lebanese army and with this UNIFIL force to be able to replace Israel and be a proxy army to deter Hezbollah. Are they being successful in that?
Look, this has been the plan by the West for decades. And truthfully, it will never be fruitful. It's impossible because the people of the land in South Lebanon will not allow themselves to be beholden by either the Lebanese military or the UNIFIL, who have never protected them. So, there's been UNIFIL bases and Lebanese military bases in every town and village in the south of Lebanon for decades. That did not stop people from arming themselves and preparing for defending themselves in the case of being attacked. And what happened when Israel attacked 2 months ago, both the UNIFIL and the Lebanese army withdrew like cowards. And they didn't give any protection to the Lebanese people. And therefore, today I can tell you, even if the Lebanese military and the UNIFIL doubles their presence everywhere, they will not be able to stop the Lebanese civilians in the south from rearming themselves and preparing themselves to protect from any Israeli attack.
Well, the Western strategy and the Israeli strategy for years has always been to divide and conquer within Lebanon. Part of that we saw with the terrible civil war in the last century. You and I talked about that previously and talked about the Christian Maronites, how they talked to the Pope, they went to the Vatican, they agreed with the Pope that they would not take part in a civil war again in Lebanon. Now the Christian Maronite president, Ayoun, is in place. Is the Maronite position holding strong? Are they staying true to their word to the Pope?
Look, there's something also very significant about the new president, Joseph Aoun, is that he is from the south of Lebanon. He is from like a third line village on the border, and he is the first ever president of Lebanon from the south. So his village was attacked by the Israeli military over the 60 days bombardment, and the churches in the south were attacked and destroyed, and the tomb of Simon Peter was destroyed and desecrated by the Israelis. So while this man is clearly the number one choice for the Americans as a president of the country, there's a lot at play that is out of the control of the Israelis and the Americans, even with such a man. He has connections to his village, he has connections to his family, his sect, his region, that will outweigh anything that the Americans may want him to do. He may provide a lot of services to the Americans and the Israelis, but there will be always red lines because of where he is from that he cannot cross.
And you think he has the strength of character to do that? That his innate allegiances will outweigh the political exigencies that exist right now?
Yeah, I mean, now he is in the top position in the country. So the influence of the United States and the Israelis has diminished because of him ascending to that position, and he's going to safe in that position for 5 years. I'm not saying that we will see this man become suddenly a resistance president, but it's clear that the any influence that the Americans had by promising him this position is gone now that he has it. And the way that even the Christian media in the country here has been portraying him and concentrating on his credentials as being a southerner from a village that was attacked, and the village itself being supportive of resistance, even though it's Christian, this is all going to play out differently than the Americans expected.
Well, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Laith Maruf. He's a Beirut-based multimedia consultant, producer, and a frontline reporter now in Lebanon. He's the founder of the executive director of FreePalestine.video. Its purpose, they say, is, quote, in the absence of media supporting the resistance forces in the English language due to the ban in the West. They are filling that gap. Laith, what's the situation now in the south of the country where we see the bombing and the destruction of infrastructure? It looks much as we've seen in the West Bank and as we've seen in Gaza over this last year and some. What does it look like to be there now?
Yeah, I mean, I spent 3 days starting the day at the end of the ceasefire traveling with the civilians as they went back into their villages. And the images are heartbreaking, total destruction of many villages. Some of these villages is 100% destruction. You know, to see the will of the people and their perseverance coming back and to watch many families pull out the remains of their children and sons and relatives from the rubble. That was heartbreaking. And at the same time, we saw the, you know, one of the Hezbollah fighters, a young man in his early 20s, exiting from under the rubble as soon as the civilians entered the village. And the Israelis withdrew. So this man was stayed in this village throughout the 2 months of occupation by the Israelis, as well as the 2 months before that, the fight on the ground that happened. So to see this man come out, I think the whole South saw him as a symbol of their perseverance as a people.
Yeah, we've talked before, and I was watching you in another interview on FreePalestine.video last night talking about the people that are possessed of this land, that they will go back to the land, and we've seen it in Palestine too, despite the fact that the infrastructure has been destroyed, that their houses no longer exist. The precariousness is hard to imagine for us, but they will go back to those lands because that they are owned by the land.
Yes, and they have, their roots are deep. They are indigenous to this land. Some of these families, their homes were destroyed at least 4 or 5 times since 1948 by the Israelis, and they keep on coming back and building bigger and more beautiful homes and more beautiful gardens and planting beautiful orchards and olive groves. Despite the continuous threat of destruction by the enemy of humanity, Zionism. And this shows you the difference between the indigenous people and their relationship to their land and that of the colonizer that, you know, runs away whenever it's not safe anymore to loot, pillage, and occupy another people's land. As we see in the north of occupied Palestine up until now, the Zionist colonists didn't go back to those colonies. Similarly, on the in the envelope of Gaza, these colonists didn't go back. Although all the you know, missile firing has stopped for over a month now, they don't go back because they're not sure the colony can provide them the safety to continue their thievery and their looting of the resources of the indigenous people.
Yeah, you mentioned that the rockets being fired into northern Israel from Hezbollah stopped with this ceasefire. Hezbollah has always said that they were fighting in support of the Palestinians in Gaza and what was happening to them. Well, that hasn't stopped. How do we round that circle with Hezbollah ceasing its support, its military support of the Palestinians?
Well, let's remember that the Aqsa flood was launched by the Palestinian resistance with one objective only, and that objective was to capture as many Israeli soldiers and prisoners of war to be able to exchange them for the thousands of Palestinians that are languishing in Israeli dungeons unjustly. And this is what we are seeing today happen. The Palestinian resistance achieved this goal and is thousands upon thousands of Palestinian prisoners will be released and have begun being released in exchange for those Israeli prisoners of war. So this is it. And this, the Israelis stopped their attack on Gaza because, and they failed with all their objectives, namely the objective to destroy the resistance, including Hamas, the objective to break the will of the Palestinian people, and the objective to expel the Palestinians from their homelands. None of those goals were achieved. Therefore, it is a resounding victory for the Palestinian people, and therefore Hezbollah will follow the directives of the Palestinian people. And since the Palestinian people are achieving their goals of exchanging their prisoners guaranteeing freedom for their prisoners, then the goal has achieved this. The war has achieved its goals, and Hezbollah doesn't need to continue any attacks. Now Hezbollah's only objective is to liberate whatever little land that is left under control of the Israelis, that is Lebanese territory.
We've seen the refocusing of Israeli aggression or amplifying of it in the West Bank. Now, I've seen suggestions that this is part of the ceasefire deal that with Hamas, that they Israel withdraws from Gaza, and it's using the opportunity to solidify its position in the West Bank to through pogroms and the usual methods to clear the West Bank for further settlement. Is that an accurate reading?
Yeah, I mean, the Zionists are obviously taking out their frustrations because of their failures in Gaza on the population in the West Bank, and they are conducting now a mass campaign where they've attacked the major cities in the north, Jenin, Tul Karim, Nablus, and Beit Lahem, as well as the refugee camps around them. It's been ongoing now for a week, full-out attack with tanks, howitzers, RPGs, helicopters, and jets. They're conducting mass campaigns of destructions of whole neighborhoods in Jenin and Tul Karim. Up until now, something like 4,000 or 5,000 families have been displaced and had to leave their homes. The squares are destroyed, the public squares in those cities. And we saw two villages in the vicinity of Beit Lahem city, the birthplace of Jesus of Palestine, completely depopulated and leveled to the ground all the houses in those villages over the last few days. So there is a ethnic cleansing campaign accelerating in the West Bank. It doesn't mean the Israelis are going to succeed. You know, look, the Israelis did the worst that they can do in Gaza. We're talking about 90-some-odd% of all standing structures destroyed in Gaza. 100% of all green spaces destroyed. There's nothing left in Gaza, and the Palestinians still refuse to surrender and are standing tall and going back to their homes the minute the Israelis withdraw. So what is the Israeli going to be able to achieve more than that in the West Bank? It can't. And the resistance is only growing in the West Bank, and the future doesn't hold anything good for the Zionist colonies. From this point on, in fact, from October 7th, it's clear the Israeli colony doesn't have any future on the land of Palestine.
Well, I've seen the Western press has been saying the same thing you just did, and they're accentuating the fact of the utter destruction. But it seems to me that they're doing this in a way to convince that there's no returning at all, that people, the Palestinian people should leave altogether. I saw a report this morning, I don't know if it's true or not, with one Israeli general saying that the Rafah gate will be open to Palestinians in one direction only, into Egypt. What Egypt has to say about that wasn't mentioned. What about this? What about rebuilding? Is it viable, and who is going to help with this, with the utter destruction, hardly two stones standing on top of each other in northern Gaza?
Well, the Egyptian President Sisi said today that Egypt will not take part in the depopulation of Gaza and the crime of ethnic cleansing. So those are very high statements. Of course, we saw throughout the war, including in the beginning of the genocide, that Biden had the same idea and asked Egypt and Jordan to take Palestinians, similar to what Trump is blabbing about today and or this crazy Israeli general. This is not something that's ever going to happen. The Israelis have attempted to do this in the 1950s when they asked Jordan to annex the West Bank and Egypt to annex Gaza, and they refused. They also attempted that in 1967 after the occupation of those lands and to expel. And again, even though Jordan is a vassal state, there is a limit to the services that a vassal can do before they themselves collapse under the weight of those, services. And so the Jordanian state will not exist if the Palestinians are expelled to there. So ultimately, these are all just delusions in the heads of the colonizer. And I tell you what, 20 years ago, if you would have talked to me about what's the solution for the mess here, I would have said one state for everybody, right, and everybody having the same right to vote. Today, I will tell you the only solution is the total expulsion of the Zionist settlers and Europe and America taking them all with them. There will be no place for them on this land anymore because of the genocide that we just watched. And according to the statement of Trump, there's only 1.5 million Palestinian left in Gaza, meaning the genocide is so huge. We have lost 800,000 Palestinian civilians in it, where, you know, that's a number that's way higher than even a third of the population killed, either directly by war, starvation, or medical neglect. Because of the lack of medical services. So there's no coming back from this. And it's not only me as a Palestinian saying this to you. I can assure you that there's no way Israel can save its reputation and exist on this planet as a normal nation anymore. There's no one on this planet that wants to do business with them or see them even coming as tourists, save for the fascists in Europe and the North America.
Well, I'd hate to rely on anything that the new president in the United States says. It is chilling, this number, as you mentioned, of 1.5 million, whether that is that he believes 1 million have been killed already or that it will reach 1 million when they're through with their plans. I can't say. He has mentioned the lovely things or something to this effect that can be done with Gaza as a tourist resort destination or for condos. I mean, ever the real estate man. Laith, we're fast running out of time. You were having a lot of trouble. I'm talking to David Rovics in the second half about his troubles with YouTube. He's been entirely demonetized, and he's had other troubles with Spotify and other platforms. You had your own problems with YouTube. What happened with YouTube? And I see you're back up now, though.
Oh, yes. So at the beginning, second week of January, we were actually, our channel was deleted completely. With no excuses given or anything. And so we mounted a campaign, and because of the public pressure, eventually YouTube reactivated our channel. And for the first time, we had direct communication with YouTube staff, which was surprising to us, honestly. But this was a kind of a de facto admittance by YouTube that we are a legitimate news source. And in this communication, YouTube was basically begging us to change our political position in the content. They didn't have any complaint about the images or the stories. They just wanted us to insert according to them, political positionality, editorial positionality that is distancing ourselves from the right of the Palestinian and Lebanese people to resist occupation. So we are back. We were never monetized. They've rejected our right to monetization since the beginning. So, you know, the only way we can sustain this productions is by direct donations from our viewers,